Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and happy early Thanksgiving to those of you joining us from the United States. If you're tuning in at that point in the year or whenever you're tuning in, happy to have you join us here for Get Yourself the Job. I'm Jennifer K. Hill, and you are here with us with Brandon Maslin. And today we have Mandy McLaughlin, who is with us as well. And we're going to be talking about diversity. But before we introduce you to Mandy, I'd like to take a moment and stop and thank our sponsors who make today's show possible. The people over at Markham Search LLC offer premier professional recruiting support in the form of temporary services, payrolling services, executive search, and a variety of other search needs. Brandon, I know you know today's guest, Mandy, so I could do the introduction, but I'd rather have you introduce her from a personal standpoint and share with us a little bit about your how you guys connected and how you got to know her.
I'm happy to do it. When we were talking about guests for the show, Mandy was one of the first people that came to mind, even back when we were dissecting. I think I actually, the day you asked me to join you as co-host, I'd actually spent earlier in the day talking to Mandy. So I love the full circle of having her on. So Mandy, thank you for joining us. I'm just going to tell the audience a little bit about you. She is the CEO and principal of Mandy Bynum Consulting, the founding member LP at How Women Invest. I met Mandy when she was head of global diversity and inclusion at New Relic. I was actually there doing a training on her very last day at that company. And every time me and Mandy connected and talked, we really found a bond and a connection. I'm such a proponent of authenticity and integrity. And those are just two words I would really use to describe Mandy. And I'll talk a little about what I saw on that final day. But let me just say that when you leave a company, there's the outpouring that I saw, the shared stories of impact that Mandy had. May you be so lucky to leave a company with truly making your mark, as I believe Mandy did at New Relic, and as I know she continues to do for every company she deals with, and helping them create better dialogue, more inclusivity, more empathy, more compassion, and just by extension, better results for their organization. With that, I am very happy to turn to my friend and at times thought partner and just all around amazing human, Mandy. Mandy, the show is Get Yourself the Job, as you know. I'd love for you to talk maybe even about your journey in your career, what brought you to where you're at. You can just go back a little further than I did at New Relic, obviously. But anything you think that's relative and where that passion for the work that you now do came from, maybe.
Mm-hmm. First, thank you so much for having me. That was a great intro. And it's always uncomfortable for women to get compliments. So I was really trying to be comfortable getting that compliment. It's really funny. I was listening to a couple episodes ago of this podcast with Dr. Tina about millennials.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, that describes me to a T. I'm definitely a millennial. And when I was listening to it, I was like, ah, those millennials. And I was like, wait a second, I am a millennial. But anyway, to answer your question, I played sports all through school. So I've always been competitive. I've always heard what I wanted to do. I knew that being present and being really good at what I was doing presently, that opportunity would show up. And that's kind of how I've lived my entire career. Wanted to go into a growing industry. So I wanted to move away from selling copiers and selling radio ads. And that was in 2008. And I was, blessing in disguise, I was let go with about 3,000 other people the day, like literally while President Obama was doing his inaugural speech. And then I found Yelp and stuck with Yelp for 6 years, which was an amazing journey. And from there, went to SurveyMonkey, and from there, went to New Relic. So I've been primarily in sales leadership positions, or had been primarily in sales leadership positions at pretty fast growing tech companies. So I have various change happening and kind of figuring out what went wrong afterwards and adjusting. However, this whole time in tech, I was typically one of one when it came to woman and Black. At a lot of my companies, there would typically be like men of color, of all colors, a few and far between. But so to the point where I didn't really make a huge, I wasn't able to form a huge community, but I was always looking to meet as many people at the company as possible. So I was part of affinity groups or whatever women's group there was at said company. I wanted to be a part because I knew that the more people I knew, the more I would know. And the more people, the more I knew, the more opportunities I would be aware of because I didn't know what those opportunities were. So I wanted to make sure I knew that what they could be, because you can't imagine what you'd see or hear. I was voluntold to kind of help one of the affinity groups launch a little bit faster. And while I was doing that, I was during my 20% time, I was actually director of sales development. So I was building a sales development team from 9 SDRs to ideally 50. And I was pregnant. I helped them get off the ground and told our chief people officer, hey, if this is ever becomes a full-time position at this company, I'd be happy to take it. So long story short, a year later, after I built the sales development team, I went on maternity leave. I took the position for head of D&I. And I think, you know, I knew that I wanted to get closer to my passion, which was really building something that had a huge impact on people's lives, but also still had that same spirit of sales. And so for me, doing equity work as a chief diversity officer and coming from sales, it's the perfect marriage between the two because you are constantly selling the value of everything that you're doing. You're constantly politicking, which is something I actually love doing, oddly enough. However, during that time, I knew I wouldn't be in it for long, and we can maybe talk about this a little bit more, but I just saw an opportunity to be able to do what I was doing at New Relic at many other companies at the same time and expand my practice. So that's how I ended up starting my own company.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Mandy, tell me about, actually, let's go there a little bit. Why don't you tell us about your new company a little bit and what you're doing today?
So I have basically a holding company that's called Mandy Bynum Consulting. I do executive coaching. We do facilitations around how to build affinity groups. We have facilitations around leadership and white supremacy, like introductions to whiteness, white supremacy, and I help businesses like get their roadmap and diversity, equity, inclusion strategy off the ground. And typically what that means is I'll build out work streams for them so that depending on how big their team is that they have assigned to whatever this diversity work is, they can feel like they have something tangible that they're working on. And then typically after a year or so, I will say, here's the budget you should be allocating to this practice. Here's how many teams you should have. And if these are the metrics that we should be looking at, here's how to do that. So it's kind of really just setting up companies who are early on in their equity journey to make sure that they're not wasting too much time doing the wrong things.
I think that's so important, Mandy. I think that what you're doing is you're helping set people up because there are a lot of institutional companies who have been doing this the way they've been doing it for a long time. And on the flip side, what's really wonderful about the world right now is every day we're seeing new companies, new startups being formed, new ways to solve problems. And you can't work on something or transform something unless you don't know it's there. I remember early on when a lot of the riots and the protests were happening, somebody had referred me to, I think it's the Harvard bias test that you can take online. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
But I thought, wow, as a human being, I just really wanted to know, what are my implicit bias? You know, do I have bias across all different types of individuals that you might come across? Because if you don't know that something is missing, then you'll never be able to transform or shift or make leap in how to be on spot. What's that area I might not be aware of? And all the more so for organizations, which is why it's imperative to bring in companies like yourself to help shine the light on what are the, it's kind of like dust, you know, imagine dust particles floating through the air. It's there. We don't notice it until all of a sudden the sunlight shines and you see how dusty the room is, right? And those are all our own negativity traits or all our own biases that we might not have realized are there. And you're kind of like the person coming in with the flashlight or the sunlight saying, hey, did you see this over here? It's just kind of a fun analogy.
Mm-hmm. The tricky part is once you shine the light, is it important enough to do something about?
So true. Well put.
When do you find that companies, what's the characteristic of a company that does think it's that important? I mean, you mentioned sort of shining lights on problems. I mean, what is the characteristics of an organization that is taking it seriously?
The companies, well, I know because I feel a certain energy from in myself, in my body, in the conversations we're having. And I think what the most successful companies at doing this, their leadership, like their CEO, who is probably going to be a white cis hetero man, works every single day through the shame and the pain of realizing they've made mistakes. It doesn't mean they're a bad person. And they're just more comfortable making mistakes because you can tell that their intention is true. And if leaders have not done that work, it is very uncomfortable for them. There are a lot of like weird terms that are thrown out. And oftentimes like they'll just kind of go dark after a while because they won't want to talk to me anymore. And that is all to say, like, if it's clear from leadership that something, inclusion, equity is something serious, it shows up in every single part of the business. And if you can't tell that I'm at the company or doing anything at the company, that's when you know great things are happening. If I have to step in and give employees permission to start affinity groups or, you know, kind of paint the spell things out for people, that's a little bit harder because the value is not coming from the top.
I want to pause, Mandy, on a moment on that in case people might not be familiar. You know, we have people tuning in from all over the world, different countries. Can you tell people what an affinity group is and how that serves a company and the individuals in it?
Thank you. Yeah. I think of affinity groups as grassroots organizations within a larger company. So affinity groups typically start as like a Slack channel of folks who are all share a Latinx background, who are all people of color. And within that group, eventually they will start meeting formally and saying, what are some things that like really burns our toast that we need to tell leadership about? And so these groups strategize on how to bubble up those ideas in a way that will improve the inclusion and create more equity within the business. When that group starts getting funding from the company, say they have, you know, a set budget for a year to sponsor nonprofits, to partner with accelerator programs, that's when it becomes an employee resource group. So that's the difference between affinity groups and employee resource groups. I mean, I gave you a very short overview. I have a whole class on this, but that's typically what it is. It starts with people who share an affinity, who want to create community within their company, and it typically grows to become a real resource for leadership within that company to expand their network to people who share said affinity.
Wow, incredible. Thank you for all the work you're doing with that. It seems like that could be a way to help get voices heard. You know, there's so many people and leadership. I know having run a company sometimes, if it's not brought to leadership's attention, especially with actionable items, that's one thing, advice to anybody out there who's working in a large organization. If you ever have something that's near and dear to your heart, be it a D&I thing, be it something else, it is so critical to, number one, speak up and get the time with the leadership in your company. And number two, to come to the table with at least 2 to 3 solutions. And that's how you can begin to transform. If you just come to an organization, you go to your CEO or your leadership executive team, and you just complain about all the things that don't work without adding the component of, hey, here are the ways that I would suggest that we might be able to integrate or implement. And what are your thoughts on this? That's where the magic can happen. And that's where you can begin to transform organizations.
It is magic, and it doesn't happen all the time. It happens less often than you think. And that whole process you described, Jennifer, seems really angelic. It's much more complicated and nuanced. But you know, that's another Oprah. It's for next week.
That's awesome.
You bring up a good point that it is gnarly work and it is hard work. If I leave a training, I once met with, I would say 90% of the work I do is with an affinity group, predominantly as a feminist woman, which skews into that more of the diversity work. And that's the work, and that's gnarly. And if I leave a session and I don't feel uncomfortable or raw, I don't think we did work. And, you know, but I can leave a group of men who are like, yeah, we got it. We're going to do everything. And I'm just like, no, you're not. Like, you said it, but you're not. And that was some of the best advice I ever got from actually a female leader. Like, they're talking to you today because I'm here. They don't care, you know? And that's unfortunate. And that's to Mandy's brilliant point. It's one of the things I've been saying for 4 years now, which is I don't believe necessarily in trickle-down economics, but I believe in trickle-down inspiration. Because when it doesn't come from the top, that all trickles down. The negativity, if it's a toxic work culture, if people pick up, it's like, we see you. We see what you're doing. We will follow your example, especially God, white cis men are like, cool, alpha pack, let's go. But when you have an inspired leader says, this matters, watch the organization, watch it get into the fabric. So Mandy, thank you for hitting on that point of it coming from really has to be at a top level importance. And then Jennifer, you had a beautiful point. And I do this in every session with, especially what I call them summits, you know, we get together and I add in like a vent session. Vent is not that bad. I mean, like, let's vent out all of the stuff we're feeling. Let's get it out. Everyone's holding it in, and it's poison. Getting it down those grips. And Mandy, I know you've seen this time and time again. My favorite part though is, and now what? And this is where Mandy comes in. All right, I listened to everyone in this organization. They let me have it. I'm going to tell you what you've got to do. And Mandy, let me ask you, when you see the receptiveness or when you see the shutting down, I know you said it was that, you said to me, as we were preparing for this, it has to be personal, right? Even to the CEO, it has to be personal. So when do you see receptiveness or when do you see the shutting down once you gather that information?
It's so funny. I was just making a note, like I said, personal work, like make sure Mandy to mention the personal work. It's different for everyone. I think anyone, if you dig deep enough, you can think of a time where you felt like the other, or you felt like you didn't belong, or that, you know, said game or system was not made for you. So that's one thing. Second thing is, in our society, we are in a white supremacist society. That doesn't mean that we're all white supremacists, that we love KKK. It simply means that in our culture, every dozen of people who are lighter. And there's this whole concept around whiteness being something that can be given and taken. We can talk about, you know, how the Italians legislated to be called white so that they could own land. And so being in this system, there historically is no incentive, zero incentive to give two rat's butts about any of this stuff. Because you can be born, go to school, you can be a PhD without ever having to figure out how to navigate any race besides your own. And so if you are a leader of a company and that doesn't, you can't connect, then you will be showing the majority of your company, who will probably be white, that there is no reason for them to care about this, because the entire society is reinforcing that they don't have to care. So oftentimes the leader is risking a lot. They're going to lose a lot of people at the company who are just like, this is too, this, all the, this guy could just, he just talks about diversity all the time. Can we just talk about something else? But that just means that that person realizes that it is indeed inclusion, belonging, equity is a part of everything a business does. It's not this like thing that sits in HR. And so it is somewhat trickle down, but it's also because it is so personal, you have to be vulnerable. And in order to have the rest of be a good leader, like your vulnerability has to be relatable. So I'll stop there.
No, I want you to continue because you are one of my favorite people on earth to talk to about this. And I've seen you do it in real time. And can you talk about why it matters? You know, you're one of my favorite people that explains the intrinsic value of diversity in just a brilliant way. Because I think there's all those charts. And I always felt I'm like, here's all the financial days. They used to say, even if you don't care about diversity and you just like money, diversity works, right? I mean, that's all, every study they do works. But I love your take on why diversity matters to an organization and why it is a value additive consistently.
Yeah. Yes, I can talk about all the numbers and like there's so much fatigue around that stuff. And even trying to compare it to like diversifying your stock, like just doesn't translate. So I think about a sales team and everyone on that team is, let's say we're selling a SaaS product. Historically and traditionally, people would look for folks who have sold SaaS product, who know the technology. And in the past, it was they had a book of business already. So they had to come with those things. However, they didn't necessarily have to be good salespeople, which kills me. And then you'd have, so that would be the case. And then, you know, you just keep doing the same thing over and over again and people make excuses for why they're not successful. Bring in, I was going to think of a black name, but I'll spare you. Bring in a person of color who doesn't have a book of business, who grew up, you know, got a chance to go to a school across town, grew up in the projects. They don't have a book of business, but man, they have so much grit. They are creative in how they can build revenue. They will try anything. They're willing to make mistakes. They have nothing to lose. That person not only adds value to the company, they're successful by doing things differently than other people and things that you can't teach. Like you can't teach grit. You can teach people how to, you know, use Salesforce. You can teach people how to use a product. Like if you're going to hire someone, they're going to be smart enough to figure this stuff out. And so by bringing in more and more people who are doing things differently to get to the same result, you can continue to expand your skill set. Especially as a leader to like, I know exactly what the characteristics are of a great salesperson and I'll see it in an instant. And I know it's not going to have anything to do with that resume. I'm just going to talk to them and the relationship and the connection we're going to make. I've had so much experience with so many different people that I know what it will take to make this person successful. So that is what I see there. That's one thing. And then the second thing, I have worked with mostly people who don't look like me. And I'm usually their first brown person they worked with, definitely first black woman. And it's hard. I am not an easy person to work with. I have a lot of opinions. I say what's on my mind. And that can be surprising and frustrating for people because, like, well, why don't you just shut up? Like, you just got something to say. But once we get past that, those challenges on the other side of that is freedom. One, everyone on the team grows when there is someone on the team that you haven't worked with before. They will always bring an extra set of value. Third thing, let's say you have two people who have the same exact resume. One person is black, one person is white. Without knowing anything about their backgrounds, we could assume that as a black person, that person has walked through society differently. the things they experience, the things they see, though times they're afraid, are going to be different than someone who is in the majority. Therefore, that person's going to see things differently. Therefore, add value to your team because they can see things that you can't.
I think that's a brilliant point that you raise, Mandy, is that we don't know, we think we know who a person is because of a resume, or we look at two pieces of paper, and let's say they have the exact same background, and one person is white and one person is Black. And having had conversations with many of my Black friends during this time of like, what's it like to be in your position? And, you know, many of my friends would say, I don't know if my son is going to come home safely just because of everything happening in the world. And the level of strength that you can't put on a resume, the things that are the intangible things, the common sense, the learning how to protect yourself and your family and how to survive in a world that's not designed for you, that sort of savviness is something that you couldn't even put a calculation on as far as what that person is going to bring to the table. And I did see what you're saying, Mandy, in the recruiting world is oftentimes if you got a woman, and I actually did a whole talk on Awake TV right when this was all happening in June, and a couple of the women who were on it were Black, and they said, listen, I'm going to say how it is. You might not like it, but I'm going to say it how it is, and I scare people. And I think that there's this opportunity here to realize it's safe to be all these ways. You know, other people might have it for whatever reason in their childhood that when somebody raises their voice or is highly opinionated, that becomes scary to them. And then, oh, I can't get to know that person, or that person goes in a certain bucket of this is somebody who I wouldn't hang out with. And so I think a bigger thing that we could do as human beings, whether we're the head of an organization or not, is to create dialogues to realize what it actually is like. Just because Mandy is opinionated and is going to tell us like it is, that might be something that our organization really needs. And how do we not fear that? How do we embrace that? And when we see a Mandy on paper compared to somebody else, how do we even connect to that certain je ne sais quoi, that certain something that you're going to bring, that strength and that courage and things that we'll just never know what it's like. I mean, I've shared this before. One of my dear friends who's Black, she went out, got her MBA, one of the smartest, brightest women I've known. And because of her name, she was passed on and passed on and passed on. And then one day she completely changed her first and last name on her resume to make it sound more Americanized. And it was the first time she started getting called in for interviews. And these are all things that if you come from a certain background, perhaps a white or another background, you might not encounter these same obstacles. So it's really like, what is valuable too? I was talking to somebody else about this. You might have one person with an IQ of 140, and you might have another person who has a street Q, like a street smarts quotient of 160, but there are, you know, IQ might be 110. Does that actually matter? Who's the person who's going to bring the most value to the company and be the one who's going to help the company think in new ways and innovate? Because that's what we all need right now. This last year has taught us innovate or die. And I don't mean that a COVID way. I mean a company way.
I have this quote that I posted on LinkedIn from the female lead and Christine King to that point. To build a strong team, you must see someone else's strength as a compliment to your weakness, not a threat to your position or authority. I mean, shit, like that's it, you know, that's everything that you and Mandy are talking. I think that's so important. And Mandy, I know we're talking about like, how do we shift the dialogue? And Jennifer, that was so eloquent. And Mandy, you were, I love your ferocity. I mean, I mean, it's one of my favorite things. And you know, I've referred you, you know, to other companies, and I literally say, make sure you're ready because she is going to make you better. She will. But if you're not ready, she's not going to play nice because it's not nice work. So if you don't want to do the work, don't work with Mandy. And I love that about you. I think it's one of my favorite qualities in you because I got to see firsthand in a room what it meant to see a group of people, I would be an affinity group, doing real work. That's why, you know, they knew that's why you were a loss. I mean, not that New World's fine, but that was the loss to them. Mm-hmm. If someone's going to do the work. Can you talk about, though? We talked about this, I love that this has been a theme of this month, Jennifer, in our Diversity, Inclusion, and Belonging Month, it's come up in every single talk. Why being the other or different is a value additive and why we should celebrate it. Mandy, you hit that so well the other day in one of our talks that we usually have. Can you talk about that? Why people should bring their uniqueness or differentness, whatever it might be.
Yeah, it was, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier around just by having darker skin, you are going to have different experiences, therefore different reactions to things, therefore different results and behaviors because of the way that you walk through the world. And so I think what has been really hard for me in this work is realizing my own privilege. Although I am, a close descendant of enslaved peoples, I grew up middle class. I went to a really good private school. I played water polo. so I mean, I'm doing okay. And realizing that everything that I was able to accomplish, I was able to accomplish in a lot of ways because it was unearned. I have lighter skin. People listen to me differently. I'm very well formally educated. Whereas other people who are much smarter than me, much harder working, I could not figure out like why they wouldn't speak up for themselves or why people wouldn't advocate for themselves. And I had to learn like not everyone's you. Not everyone is running around kicking doors down and not everyone can afford to do that specifically. Not everyone can afford to put their neck out because a lot of times, and I've experienced this, when I put my neck too far out, the company didn't want to work with me anymore because I made them uncomfortable. And so I think that a lot of folks who are coming up in their careers, not only do they have to figure out how to navigate an industry that wasn't built for them. I'm talking about people, women and people of color, an industry that wasn't built for their success and doing it all online and reaching out to people who they don't know, starting conversations and connections. That is all really, really hard. And having to do that when you're early in your career is even harder. However, where I have always drawn my strength is, I've heard from a lot of women, like, what if, like, you're just the token hire? It's like, well, if I'm the token hire, I'm going to show them what that value is all about. If I am one person, I am representing 10,000 people behind me who can't be in this room. So if I'm going to be in this room, I'm going to bring it. And because those people behind me are depending on me. And so I think for anyone who's either getting into this industry, a lot, and it means something. And I think your story and your uniqueness is your value. Like everything else you can teach.
I love that. That's such a good quote. You just could eat it. That's such a good bite-sized quote, which your uniqueness is your value. It's such a Mandy Bynism. I just dig it so much. I've never heard you say, if you're in the room, bring it.
No other choice. Maybe we'll go home.
Yeah. And Jennifer, you and I are both recruiters and we talk about that a lot in our work, right? I know you and I have the same philosophy to interviewing, which is like, bring it. You're either going to push them off or you're going to make that tangible impact that's going to get you the job. And Manny, I assume are you suggesting the same thing for interviewing as well? I know what we're saying when we get the job. What about once we get the job? What about getting the job?
Yeah. We are in such a great time where people want to make diverse hires. And so if you are from a background that is not the majority, that's already seen as a value. However, that doesn't mean that the company interviewing knows all of their bias, that they understand that you, just because you're not a culture fit, doesn't mean you won't be a value add. So, understanding that, first of all, that there will be bias in the interview process. And also knowing that those different parts of you have value, being able to speak to them in a way that's going to resonate with the company. So let's say you are, again, going into sales, because this is what I know, but you've never sold software, but you came from a real estate background. Like if you came from a real estate background, didn't go to school, don't have formal education, and you've sold homes, like that is a big deal. Like, you've had to navigate a system all on your own that is not very supportive for anyone. And so I think it's really important to talk about those things and as early as you can, make it, name the difference that you bring, name the value that you bring so that people don't forget it.
I love that, as early as you can. Jennifer, any thoughts about that as it relates to recruiting, especially what Mandy talked about?
I think it's so important what you were just talking about, Brandon and Mandy. When you interview, people so often want to hide who they really are. And then the person who they show up on day one is totally different. And then there's the clash and it doesn't work out. And so you certainly don't want to come out and air all your dirty laundry. I think the thing that is going to hurt people, and Brandon, I know we're going to be doing a special series beginning January, the first week of January. And for 8 weeks, we're going to do a full A to Z, how to not only get your dream job, how to interview for it, how to land it, but a quick little sneak peek of one of the things that we'll talk about is that it's so important how you talk about things. If you make something significant or a big deal, it doesn't matter if you're a diversity candidate or a non-diversity candidate, if you make things a big deal and you spend the interview complaining about people and situations, chances are if it's not going to be a good fit. Now, if that's who you really are as a human being, if at your core, most of your time is spent complaining, a bigger question I would ask you is, you know, to go out and ask people in your life, what's it like to be around me? What was your impression of me when we met? You know, where can you count on me? Where can't you count on me? Where have I surprised you? Where have I disappointed you? And what can you count on me now for? What's your opinion of me now? Because the bigger question of why people don't get hired is not as much, it's a lot of it is not showing up as yourself and knowing, can people count you up? Here's 4 hours and make a little notch on your iPhone or on a piece of paper and notice how often you complain, justify, or defend your position and ask yourself, what's it like to work with me? Because if that person shows up in an interview, no matter what color, what background, how good their resume is, that person is likely not going to get hired. However, if somebody comes in, like Mandy so eloquently put it, and that person says that, oh, you know, they're talking about a thing as the injustice of it. You know, here's where I came from in my last role. What was missing was X. What I would love to bring to the table in my next role is Y. And when you talk about what's missing and how those problems can be solved, you're going to be hired no matter what the role is, diversity or otherwise. It's just important to know if you're making things significant and you're out there complaining, chances are, no matter what type of candidate you are, it's not going to be, you know, beneficial.
Mandy, thank you, Jennifer. That was a perfect synopsis. I can't wait till January, by the way, just to go through like the 8th. I'm already nerding out on it. Mandy, before we let you go, sort of thoughts, anything you want to say? I mean, I almost feel like we're in inside the actor studio. I kind of want to give you the classroom, but you know, take us to school. What else do we need to know about, you know, that companies need to know about getting great diversity or for individuals to bring their diversity?
It is so, I cannot say enough how rooted this work is in ego and your own personal values. And that goes for everyone. Even folks who look like me, there has been an assimilation culture due to the need to survive. And the way to be successful was to assimilate and erase your differences as opposed to stepping into them. And that's tough to get through no matter where you are in your career. I was speaking to a woman in a class I took. I'm always taking inclusion classes, courageous conversations, learning more about theories around equity. And Olin was saying, like, she was a woman of color, brown like me, saying that she has had to come to terms with the fact that she has privileges, that she carries things of whiteness in her, the behaviors that have been conditioned, she's been conditioned to do, to perpetuate things that will oppress people of color. And the hardest part for her is confronting other Black people about those things when they do it, because it's always been like, we're in this together. Like, we can't be giving each other crap about this stuff. We got to work together. And it's always been so hard to call out the people who are closest to you. And so again, it goes to how personal this work is. If you are not willing, there's two things. So one, this work is hard, it's painful, and there's a lot of shame and guilt associated with it. If you want to sit in that shame and guilt, by all means, go for it. Then when you go back to work, you're literally stepping out of it and you still have that guilt, but you're not doing anything about it because you don't want to talk about it anymore. However, if you walk into this equity work saying, everything that I'm going to find out about my behaviors, about the things that I say, do not mean that I'm a bad person. I'm still going to feel guilt. I'm still going to feel pain. But once I get through that and I'm able to change my behaviors based on what I learn about myself, then I can show up as a more authentic person, someone who genuinely wants equity. But you can't do that until you separate this whole equity, white supremacy, separate it from you being good or bad of a person.
So, Mandy, tell us before we let you go where people can learn more about you, whether it's bringing you into the organization, coaching, all the myriad of things you provide. Where can people discover more about you?
I'm at Mandy Bynum everywhere, Instagram, Twitter. My website's mandybynum.com, LinkedIn, Mandy Bynum. And we are launching our Race Equality Index. So you can find me at raceequalityproject.com. There will be lots of information coming out about that. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And I'm very excited for the Race Equality Index. I'm very, very, I encourage people to check that out. That is going to be, I believe, industry transformative. I was just talking to another entrepreneur today about it and raving. So, Mandy, I value you as a human and someone who helps me level up and everyone around her. So you have a true gift, my friend. And thank you for the work.
Thank you so much. It was so great getting to hear your wisdom and insights. It was truly brilliant, a lot of what you shared. And I can't wait to see the index as well. So I encourage everybody to go and check that out.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Wishing you a happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Brandon. I hope you had some notes, my friend. That was a lot.
I did. I feel like people are like, why is he looking down? I'm never texting. I'm just taking furious notes as I hear someone. I've given up on three. We're never going to do three again because until we stop it. The day we get three takeaways, we'll, from a guest at least, will be a unique day. When we do it, we'll try to do three, just you and me. But for day, I got, my usual eight or nine. Be a part of something. Be a part of something bigger than yourself and your job. So don't just be going and do your job. Go. And so my tips are for this, if you're in your job, don't just do your job. Find the affinity groups. Find, we call them ERGs or employee resource groups, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter, but get involved in something more than just your job. And we talked about with Dr. Ivy, we talked about the importance of millennials, especially that generation, bringing their full self. So get involved. And the reason is because you meet more people, we get more opportunities. That's what she talked about. I thought that was great for the work you and I do. Inclusion comes from the top. I call it trickle-down inspiration. Mandy, real, you could hear her passion for when someone's willing to do that work and someone doesn't. You lead by example in this work. I think everyone who's listening today should ask them a time where they felt like the other. I spent most of my life, and I still do at times, feeling like the other. I can go on another day on why that is, but it's painful, and it's hard. And I know what I look like. I know that I'm a white cis male, but I can get into a deep story of the otherness, and I still suffer from that. So if you do that, it does open your eyes. It creates empathy and compassion. Doing things different equals success. I love that. Doing things different equals success. That is good for any company, any leader in any company listening. If you are in the room, bring it. Mandy talked about her obligation to everyone who wasn't in the room to bring it. So I don't want to put any onus on anyone. I think that's just good advice in general. If you're in a room, bring it. You owe it to yourself. And certainly if you want to do it on behalf of others, by all means. Your diversity is your value. And by the way, if you're going to bring your diversity, your innovation, if you're in an interview, bring it as early as possible. I thought that was Jennifer, you pointed that out as well. So that was such a beautiful point for people to take away from, which is bring it early, bring it fast. The quicker you get rid of the wrong job or the wrong person, the quicker you go on with your life and they go on with theirs. If someone doesn't want all of you, they shouldn't get any of you.
True story.
Boom. All right. Friend. Thanks for bringing it.
Thank you for bringing it. I'm so glad that you had Mandy join us today, and I can see why you wanted to have her on. She's just a firecracker, man. She has great energy, and you could just feel her energy emanating from the screen. And I can imagine the work she does and the difference it must make for people. So it's so great to have her join us here today. And thank you for those of you who joined us on Facebook Live as well. We had Rev Reg, we had Ken Sweet, Tony Sip, and many others right now. So sometimes I am looking down as well just to thank you all for tuning in and seeing if any of you have comments that you want to leave us live during the interview that you'd like to address, and double or triple the amount of ratings that we had just in the last 3 weeks. So we greatly appreciate it. Keep those coming. That's the only way we can provide you great content, is by you rating us, leaving us feedback and comments on iTunes or on our Get Yourself the Job page or getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. Brandon and I also welcome any emails from you with thoughts on episodes or future episodes that you'd love to have. And we're super excited to launch this special series coming up in January on the A to Z's of landing your dream job. So thank you for being here with us. Happy Thanksgiving again to everybody in the U.S. who's been tuning in with us. And enjoy a safe, happy, healthy holiday wherever and whenever you're listening to this.
Listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.